What really happened to Joseph Ricci, the occult investigator and possessor of the Dark Tome? Is whatever thing that may lurk just beyond that hidden doorway real? And is it dangerous? We'll learn today, just after this.
I'm someone who loves trying out different makeup looks, but doesn't really wear much on a daily basis, so I like to focus on making sure I have high quality staples. And whether you like a fresh face, full glam, or somewhere in between, you've probably seen Thrive Cosmetics Viral Tubing Mascara. I've certainly seen it everywhere. You know the one in the turquoise tube? So that mascara, along with all of Thrive Cosmetics' beauty products, are certified 100% vegan and cruelty-free, which I look for in makeup, and they've got excellent quality to match. And something I didn't know from all the mascara videos I've seen is that for every product sold, Thrive Cosmetics donates either that same product, another product that is needed more, or a monetary donation. They've worked with over 500 nonprofits to help with a wide range of causes like supporting cancer survivors, people experiencing homelessness, education access, and so much more. Knowing that makes me feel even better about using their products. And I do enjoy using them. Like I said, I like having high quality staples, and so my favorites are products that are multi-purpose, like the Brilliant Eye Brightener. It comes in a bunch of colors, and I like using them as eyeliner, eyeshadow, and even highlighter. Thrive Cosmetics is luxury beauty that gives back. Right now, you can get an exclusive 20% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/thrive. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS, .com/thrive for 20% off your first order. Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Hi, this is Fred Greenhalgher, host of Undertow, Realm's podcast taking you under the surface and into the weird and the wicked. Today, we're again turning over the mic to Christopher Inaga, the host of the Point Mystic podcast, who'll be guiding us through the second part of Point Mystic's journey into the Dark Tome. Before we dive in, a quick reminder that if you like what you hear, you can find more Point Mystic by going to pointmystic.org or by searching Point Mystic wherever podcasts are served.
When he first died, I thought like, is this somehow my fault because I touched the book? I touched the book that I wasn't supposed to touch, that nobody was supposed to touch, because the books in that safe were dangerous. But, you know, he had told me it was a book that was going to make the world better. And I think he believed it. I think he really thought that, but now I'm not really so sure.
I'm Christopher Reynaga, and this is Point Mystic. Each episode we speak about stories behind the myths and legends, the unexplained, the magical. Today we bring you the second and final chapter in the tragic death of Dr. Joseph Ricci. The destruction of his research into doors to other worlds, and of the disappearance of one of the most infamous books in occult history, The Dark Tome. The floodgates of Willow Hill. Do you know what happened to your grandfather at Willow Hill in 1955?
Sam knew. My mother, Samantha, she knew. She was there. She survived, and I mean she survived because she was a young girl, and she was, you know, safe in her bed, back in town. But I know that whatever was out in those woods killed our family.
The floodgates of Willow Hill is one of the few deeply researched cases that survived Ricci's death. The details survive in the famous case study published in the New England Journal of Supernatural Studies. In 1955, Dr. Joseph Ricci finally discovered one of the floodgates he had been searching for so long, in an unnamed story of the Dark Tome. That story led him into the backwoods of New England, to a place called Willow Hill. Strange sightings had plagued Willow Hill for years, and Ricci arrived in time to find the floodgates were fully open, and that otherworldly creatures were beginning to kill anyone who wandered too close to the gates. Using the Dark Tome as his weapon, Ricci assembled a party of Willow Hill townspeople to fight back the monsters and close the floodgates of Willow Hill. They managed to do so at great price.
No one knows yet what caused bodies scattered over a wide area. Several nearby residents thought an atomic bomb had dropped. Throughout the day, police, firemen, civil defense workers, and federal investigators prowled.
While Ricci was able to close the gates with his occult knowledge, he was one of the only survivors.
His 7-year-old daughter had awakened him. She said, "I'm scared." It was the wail of sirens, one after another, that frightened the girl.
Well, it's why Grandpa Joe eventually adopted my mother and helped her get into the university. She was orphaned too. She was the only one in our family left alive by what happened out there. And I think that Grandpa Joe saw that, you know, she was wicked smart, really smart. She was driven. She wanted to be educated and she loved books. She wanted to be well-read. And I think he appreciated that. I think he saw something. He saw a fellow reader, a fellow searcher of knowledge, and I think he wanted to help foster that. Now, I don't think he told her the real details of what happened out there, but at least not until she was an adult. But I'll tell you, I think she already knew. Sometimes I think when something really bad happens to you or happens to your family, something really tragic, I think that thing connects to you somehow. It bonds itself to you, and you just sort of know. You can just sort of feel its effects and feel it. I was going to say feel it coming for you, but maybe that sounds crazy, but I think that's how my mother felt. I think she already knew what happened out in Willow Hill, and I think it damaged her emotionally. It made her, well, I can't really say that my mother ever really mothered me. She could be cold, and sometimes you'd talk to her, and so I can't, like I said, I can't really say that she mothered me. She wasn't really that kind of mom, but that was more Grandpa Joe's role. He's the one that raised me.
The tragic events at Willow Hill changed Ricci forever. He'd confirmed, for himself at least, what his mentor, the Magus, had believed was true. That somewhere beyond these other worlds dwelled a dark force waiting to devour every world it could touch. Bringing the full influence of Miskatonic University to bear, Ricci began to cautiously use the book to study doorways to other worlds, some like our own, others so strange as to be alien, searching for evidence of worlds tainted by this dark force. It would prove to be an elusive search. But Ricci was committed. With the Dark Tome in his possession, he vowed that what happened to Samantha Larson's family and the people of Willow Hill, and to his own benefactor, the Magus, would never happen again.
Oh, Ricci, he was definitely on the side of the angels, at least far as where he believed the book come from. what it could do, you know. He become one of the world's experts on places where there was all kinds of supposedly concentrations of doors and portals into other worlds, you know, Bermuda Triangle, the Mystic Headlands, light at the end of the world. But Willow Hill was where he got his start, and where he started using the Dark Tome on his own, at his own mission, I guess you'd say, to kind of save the world.
Professor Joseph Ricci continued his work at Arkham and became involved with international efforts to study doorways, as well as secret military programs such as MKUltra and Project Gatekeeper. In time, he enlisted the help of his daughter Samantha, by then a promising graduate student herself, as his apprentice, both in his research and with the Dark Tome. Throughout the known history of the Dark Tome, even in ancient times, there's this pattern of younger people apprenticing to the possessor of the book. Why is that?
Well, it don't have to be about the Dark Tome. You know, young people, they like to learn. They've been apprenticing on a whole bunch of stuff as long as anybody can remember. I don't know if it's got that much to do with just the book.
His life work continued to be a focus on the floodgates, doors into dangerous worlds that had been tainted by, or had always belonged to, the Dark Force, which Ricci became increasingly concerned about throughout his life. He began to withdraw from public research, devoting himself entirely to his study of the Dark Force, a force that he was afraid was spreading and destroying all worlds that it could reach. In time, he began to feel that there was a shadowy group or a conspiracy that seemed to be working against him, that was always one step ahead. He began to avoid the university, to guard his research, and to keep the Dark Tome always with himself. Then came the discovery that shocked him. The floodgates that he had strived to close throughout his life, including the floodgates at Willow Hill, were all being reopened. Clearly, there were forces working against him.
He showed up at the house that day. It was just after I got home from high school. And he looked so distraught. My Grandpa Joe, at least around me, had always been the kind of guy that just never really seemed to worry about much of anything. Everything would be okay. But not that day. He looked almost inconsolable. He had said that someone was opening all the floodgates. He said he wanted the Dark Tome to tell him the truth. But I guess he wasn't getting what he needed, and he kept muttering, you know, I'm too old, or I'm asking it the wrong questions. And he said, I need you to do it, Mary. And he had that book with him, and he handed it to me. I'll tell you, I was scared. I told him no. I said, ask Mom to do it. I was not going to open that book ever again. And I just, all I could think about was hearing that huge thing slithering through the woods when I sat on Grandpa Joe's lap when I was a kid, and I told him so. I told him I wasn't comfortable. I couldn't do it. And then he started to cry. I've never seen my Grandpa Joe cry before then. He said, whatever's in those woods is coming. I remember he said this exactly. It's coming, and it will come out and eat the world. And he told me he couldn't trust anyone else, even my mom. So we went to the library together, and I opened the book for the second and the last time, and I said, tell me the truth of what happened at Willow Hill. That's all I asked. And so the book started to glow, and it opened to a story called The Floodgates of Willow Hill by Mary San Giovanni. Mary, I thought, oh, hey, that's like my name. And I thought maybe that was a sign, you know? And the wall of the library became a forest again. But this time it was a much darker and uglier looking forest than the one from Fairy Tales. I mean, this one, everything looked dead, but it was still growing. And there were these sort of ugly looking, I don't know if they were flowers or mushrooms, but they billowed up this weird sort of glowing dust, and the place felt like a poison. I could feel it in my bones. The place felt poisonous to me. And I happened to glance at Grandpa Joe, and I saw him flinch like he was slapped in the face. But he got up and he walked into those woods alone while I stood there with the dark tome. So I didn't know what to do. He was gone and I was there with this book, and I felt like he was gone for hours. And the whole time he was gone, all I could think about was that there was something out there coming through to eat the world, like he said. That I kept waiting for that sound, that awful sound, that slithering sound of whatever that huge thing was that had been moving through the woods. I kept waiting for that sound, and I felt sick. I felt sick. I thought, if he doesn't come through the woods again, I'm going to throw up right here on the library floor. I'm going to throw up right here on top of this god-awful book. And who knows what will happen then. Maybe he'll be stuck in there. Maybe he'll be lost in there. And a couple times I thought, you know, maybe I should go in after him. But I couldn't do it. I couldn't follow him, because all I could think about was that awful slithering sound. That god-awful thing in the woods. I waited. And finally, Grandpa Joe came back. But he looked different. He looked devastated. And he said, "I tried to save her. I tried, but I failed. I've made a terrible mistake."
Did he confide in you what he saw?
No. No, he told me his life was in danger and he had to protect me. But he wouldn't tell me what he saw. He wouldn't tell me what happened when he was out there in the woods. We did close the book, and then he called my mom, Sam, on the phone. He called her right away, and I heard him talking to her. And I overheard him tell her that someone was after the dark tome and that he needed to bring it somewhere safe. And he told me after he got off the phone that what she said to him was to bring it to the university right away, that it could only be safeguarded there, and only if he would agree to finally let them have it. And I guess for the sake, I mean, he had looked at me, you know, and nodded, and you know, finally he agreed on the phone with her that he would do that. And I think it was really to protect me. I think he thought, whatever had happened, this book was some kind of doorway, and he had to make sure that it was shut and locked and padlocked and put someplace where it wasn't ever going to hurt anybody. And he said he'd get on the road right away and he'd be in Arkham by nightfall.
Well, of course, there was always a lot of rumors swirling around that the powers that be up at Miskatonic University wanted to get that book from Richie. He'd got to be quite a big deal with that, and they knew it. He'd found this magical artifact, become the crown jewel of the university's research, and I'm pretty sure they figured they'd be a lot safer if it was in their hands, not his.
Then he walked straight past me to his big black Cadillac, this big boat of a car that he drove. And I tried to talk to him, to tell him I was scared, that I didn't know what was going on. And he shushed me like someone was there watching us. And I remember that That made me even more scared because I thought, what if something had followed him out of those horrible woods and it was just something I couldn't see? But he was a man on a mission. He went to the car and came back. And this, when he came back, his arms were filled with notebooks and case files and film reels and all kinds of stuff. And it was all of his research on doorways. I know that. They were labeled. He brought them to his desk in the library, and he piled them up on the desk until they were literally spilling on the floor. Then he started piling up things on the floor, and he kept going back. It took several trips, and he just filled up the floor space with all of this material on doorways. And I remember thinking, like, how could there be so much of this information out there and so many people don't know? How could there be that many doorways? I sure as hell hope not, you know? But he piled it all up on the floor, and then he locked the library door behind us, and he said, "This'll be safe here for now."
Then Professor Ricci turned around, the white book in his hands, and told his granddaughter to leave their home and not come back.
He said, "Don't go back into the house, Mary. Not until it's gone." He said, I was so stunned. He just stood there, the book in his hands, and he wanted me to go. And I didn't kiss him goodbye. I didn't even say goodbye. I just left the house. I remember I walked down that long tree-lined driveway, and I was kind of in a daze, and shortly after, I heard his car coming up behind me, and I stopped walking. I thought he was coming to pick me up, that he was coming to tell me he was sorry, that everything was going to be okay. I mean, he'd always told me everything was going to be okay, and he didn't even slow down. He looked at me as he passed, and I can see his face in my head even now. I can see it. It was calm, and it was certain, and I saw in his eyes that he loved me, and I saw that damn white book on the seat next to him, and then he drove past, and he was gone. And I stood there for a long time after his taillights disappeared, and was watching where he had been. I guess maybe I was hoping he'd come back. I wanted him to come back. But he didn't, and I stood there. I stood there for a really, God, it was a long time. I mean, it was long enough that the library on the East Wing was just flames, just a pillar of flame by the time I turned around.
Yeah, I remember that fire. Wasn't too far from here as the crow flies. They called it an accident. You believe that? The dark tome vanishes with Richie in the car accident, and all his research disappears in the house fire. It's more than a little bit suspicious, if you want to ask me about it.
What do you suspect?
Oh, I'm not sure what I suspect, but I'm just saying, them things kind of line up. It feels like there's something else going on than what meets the eye right up front, if you follow my drift here.
On Sunday, March 18th, 1979, at exactly 5:03 p.m., Dr. Joseph Ricci's Cadillac DeVille broke through the guardrail of the Highway 95 bridge near Simpson Falls, Maine. There were over a dozen eyewitnesses in nearby cars. None of them can explain what they saw, but most testified that before it left the road and plunged into the icy waters below, the car exploded in green fire.
You know, there was witnesses to that accident, and they claim there was one figure driving that car, and then there were two figures, and they were struggling together. Then the car went off in the canal, and it was gone. Well, there's a lot in there between what really happened. I'm just saying, who really knows?
Of all the witnesses, one, a young girl who'd been looking out the passenger side of the car driving next to Professor Ricci, testified that the second figure in the car had no face, and that the instant before the car went over the side of the bridge, that it gripped a large white book in its hands. Over 40 years after his death, there are still no conclusive answers to the fate of either Dr. Joseph Ricci or the Dark Tome. No bodies or book were pulled from the wreckage of his car that had sunk to the bottom of the Sebasticook River. But some things are certain. Ricci's lifetime of research into both the phenomenon of supernatural doorways and of the dark force beyond some of them is gone. A tragedy even more famous in the history of supernatural research than perhaps even the Dark Tome itself. Based on Mary's own testimony, it was determined that Ricci had secretly removed most of his own research from the university archives in the days before his death, and that it was destroyed in the fire that consumed his personal library and half of his estate. All that remains for those of us that follow the trail he blazed in paranormal investigation are his published works on the nature of supernatural doorways. The bulk of what was once known has been lost. Samantha Larson, Dr. Ricci's adopted daughter, now herself chair of the linguistics department at Miskatonic University, declined to be interviewed by our show. But she did grant us access to what little remains of Ricci's published work, including this archival footage taken from a 1974 speech by Dr. Ricci 5 years before his death.
And so I come before you now with the direst of warnings. As you know, I have dedicated my life to studying what lies beyond these gates, and though these other worlds may be enchanting or dangerous, their danger is nothing compared to the evil that lies beyond, that seeks to consume all worlds, including our own. With the grace of God, we must fight it together.
In the bottom of the frame, in his hands, is the smooth white shape of a book, the only known image on film of what may be the Dark Tome itself. Do you believe Ricci? That there's some dark force beyond these worlds that is dangerous?
It don't come to believing or not believing, Ricci. The point is, there's a lot of dark stuff in the world. If you're paying attention, you've had experience with it. I certainly have, and you can call it Satan, satanic. You can call it devil worship. You can call it anything you want, but they're just words. Because we're trying to grapple with expressing something bigger than we can understand, something we can't really get a hold of. So, of course, there's dark forces. We feel them. If you haven't been impacted, if it hasn't changed your life in some major way, you're not paying attention.
Do you ever wonder who's looking over your shoulder when you're exploring the web? Do you want to keep tracking cookies, curious websites, and your internet service provider from sniffing out too much about your browsing activity? What about gaining the ability to virtually travel to different parts of the world and reshape your internet experience? Well, enter NordVPN. NordVPN protects your internet privacy and lets you go borderless. You can experience sporting events and entertainment that aren't available in your region. When you're on the go, NordVPN protects your data while accessing public Wi-Fi, and in tandem with the Nord Threat Protection Service, protects you from malicious downloads, viruses, and phishing sites. Best of all, this protection is laser fast, so avoid buffering and lagging while streaming or gaming, and stop your ISP from bandwidth throttling. If you've never used a VPN before, you may be surprised how much your internet experience is shaped by what country of origin you're believed to be from. I've actually had quite a bit of fun using NordVPN as a learning tool with my kids. We change around our virtual location, go to different countries, revisit familiar websites from a new country of origin, and see how things are different. For the cost of a cup of coffee a month, your NordVPN account can be used on up to 6 devices. So why wait? Get the best discount off your NordVPN plan by going to nordvpn.com/undertow. Our link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. And there's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. That's nordvpn.com/undertow.
You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales, because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten. As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/realm.
Your grandfather believed that there was a dark force beyond our world that wanted to enter it and possess it. Do you believe that's true?
Yes, I do. I do. I know that a lot of times fairy tales were written to teach kids about danger and to help them process the world around them as being a dangerous place. And Grimm's fairy tales, I mean, they never shied away from the ugliness of the world. But what I think is out there is what the fairy tales only hint at, what goes far beyond the wolf in the woods. I really believe that there is something out there that wants to hurt us. Something that, as my grandfather said, wants to eat the world. And I hope to God I never come across it, because I'm not so sure that there is anything else out there in other worlds that could protect us from it.
You are a rare bookstore owner, right here in the town where Ricci lived and where the Dark Tome disappeared. What would you do if it reappeared today, right here in your hands?
I don't know. What would anybody do? I mean, we're in a place where the Dark Tome has been, but what would anybody do with it? It's a powerful thing, that's all. It's a powerful thing.
Does the Dark Tome still exist?
Well, look, why wouldn't it? Let's put it this way. Why would anybody think something that has been around, far as anybody can tell, centuries, generations, lifetimes, in and out of people's hands, far as back as anybody can remember, why wouldn't it be around? But let me tell you something, chummy. I'd be a little cautious as you go forward looking into the Dark Tome.
Mary, you are, as far as anyone knows, one of the last people, if not the last person, to see the book. Do you think the Dark Tome still exists?
No. It's gone. It's gone. Along with my grandfather. They're both gone.
Did the book meet its end in the fatal car accident that claimed the life of Joseph Ricci? What of his warnings of a great evil that may exist somewhere beyond the floodgates? The world may never know. In the intervening years since Ricci's death, rumors have surfaced that the Dark Tome still exists, that it was founded in an estate sale, that it was discovered by a teenage witch, or is in the hands of a powerful cabal, or is housed safely in the secret archives of the Vatican. But like its enigmatic origins, there may be no truth that we can ever know about the curious history of the Dark Tome and the evil that it foretold. Thank you for taking this journey into the unknown with me. Special thanks to Joseph Ricci's granddaughter, Mary Larson, and Mr. Gussie of Gussie's Books.
And now, an update to our story. I'm Christopher Reynaga, and the episode you just listened to, The Curious History of the Dark Tome, was first released 3 years ago. In the time since this was broadcast, new rumors about the Dark Tome and its continued existence have come to disturbing light. Like many things surrounding the Dark Tome legend throughout history, it begins and ends with a fire. 9 months ago, Wilbur Gussie, the expert on occult books that Point Mystic consulted for the history of the Dark Tome, went missing in a blaze that destroyed Gussie's books in Simpson Falls, Maine. His body was not found.
Olivia!
Neither was the body of a missing high school girl that he was rumored to have abducted, a girl named Cassie Sullivan.
Mr. Gussie?
On the day the fire broke out, police had been called to Gussie's books to search the premises and arrest him on suspicion of endangering a minor and kidnapping.
Mr. Gussie, I've got the police with me. We have a search warrant.
Before Cassie's disappearance, she'd confided to her high school guidance counselor that Wilbur Gussie was in possession of a powerful magical book that could open doorways to other worlds, and that he was teaching her to use it. Was this book the Liber Tenebris? The Dark Tome? Or was it one of dozens of other famous magical books that we've investigated that have been known to open supernatural doorways, like the De Viremis Mysterious and the Necronomicon Ex Mortis? We do not know. Wilbur Gussie is currently reported as a missing person by the Maine State Police. Like the strange disappearance of Dr. Joseph Ricci that began our tale, he too has vanished without a trace. Then, last month, Simpson Falls, Maine, made national headlines. The surgical wing of Sebasticook River General Hospital burnt to the ground in a 5-alarm fire that could not be affected by water or chemical retardants. A fire so hot that it appeared to burn pure white. Nurses and patients of the wing described an apparition of a young woman standing in the center of the burning ward, an ethereal white book in her hands, from which poured light and flame. Who was this mysterious figure? Are either of these strange events in Simpson Falls related to the disappearance of the Dark Tome in this town 40 years ago? We may never know the truth, but there's one thing that we have learned that may be certain about the Dark Tome itself. That is the final event that compelled us to update this episode for you now. A recent phone call from Mary Larson, Professor Ricci's granddaughter.
I have to tell you something.
Mary, hold on. I'm switching on the phone recorder, all right?
I have to tell you something. I lied about the book. Grandpa didn't have it with him the night he died in the car accident. I think he meant to burn it in the library with all of his notes and research. I think his trip to the university was a distraction to keep people that wanted it from stopping the fire in the house. It must have been our family Bible he took with him in the car. Not that it did him any good. When he told me to leave, he told me to never forget the story of the Golden Phoenix from the Brothers Grimm. Don't forget it, Mary, he said. And I thought he meant the monsters slithering in the woods. I didn't know what he really meant until I found it. I found the Dark Tome in the ashes of the library. It wasn't there before, but I watched it come back from its own ashes 3 days after he died. Like a phoenix. I saw it happen. And I didn't want anything to do with it. I was only 16 years old. I put it in the big piles of furniture and things for the estate sale. And when Mother sold the house, and the book went away. The book just went away.
Why are you telling me this?
The Dark Tome, it's come back. It's come back to me. Right here in Simpson Falls, I found it. Or it found me, and it wants to tell me a story.
Mary, listen to me.
I've opened a doorway. I'm leaving this book behind. I don't need it anymore. I'm walking into the dark woods. I'm going to find out what's making that terrible sound, that slithering. Can you hear that? That crunching? I'm going to find out what's coming to eat the world. I'm going to find out for Grandpa Joe.
Mary? Can you hear me? Mary? All of the knowledge once known about the doorways to other worlds and of the dark force that Dr. Joseph Ricci warned the world against is now lost to us. Those of us who investigate the supernatural must continue to rebuild his legacy. Research into supernatural doorways and the places where they're concentrated must continue. But some artifacts that are associated with those doorways may be too dangerous as the dark force that may lay beyond some of those doors. Only one thing is certain. Somewhere out there, the Dark Tome does still exist. Waiting.
Where does the doorway to the Dark Tome end and Point Mystic begin? And what waits for us on the other side of any magical doorway we should encounter?
These are mysteries we'll explore on other days. Next time on Undertow, we return to the Dark Tome storyline, where we pick up with Cassie Pinkham, who nearly escaped capture at the hand of Parabellum agents. She'll travel with the book to ancient India to learn all about free will. To learn all about free will, here on Undertow.
Hi, I'm Alexis Ohanian. You may know me as one of the co-founders of Reddit, but more recently, a large part of my identity is being a father to my two wonderful daughters. In my podcast, Business Dad, I'm hoping to open up the conversation about balancing careers and family. The one thing I constantly hear successful people say, without fail, is that they wish they'd spent more time with their kids. That's time no one can get back. So I decided to create Business Dad, to engage in the conversation about how we're spending our time now, providing a forum for successful dads to share their joys and challenges of being a working parent. You'll get to hear from a wide range of business dads, from Rainn Wilson and Guy Raz to Todd Carmichael and Shane Battier. And while this podcast will talk about business and will definitely be featuring dads, I think everyone can learn something from these incredible conversations as we unpack the expectations we all have about careers, relationships, and ourselves. Business Dad is available now, so be sure to listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
What are you? Who are you?
I'm Christopher. Christopher Renaga from Point Mystic. This is my dog, Agatha.
What is this place?
You're in the Wildwood Forest. It's okay. You're safe.
How did you know I would end up here when I walked through the door?
I didn't. It was a hunch. But when you told the book where you wanted to go, you did say you wanted to find out what dark thing is coming to eat the world. Welcome to Point Mystic.
You've been listening to Point Mystic, Journey into the Dark Tome, Part 2. If you like what you heard, join the Point Mystic community by going to pointmystic.org or by following Point Mystic wherever podcasts are to be found. This episode is a work of fiction. Names, characters, places, and incidents are either products of the creator's imagination or are used fictitiously. Point Mystic, Journey into the Dark Tome was written and produced by Christopher Reynaga, featuring characters from the Dark Tome, created by Fred Greenhalgh and William DeFries, as well as The Floodgates of Willow Hill by Mary San Giovanni. Story development and script editing by Marguerite Croft. Mary San Giovanni's novel, Beyond the Gate, is available now. Christopher Reynaga is your host and narrator for Point Mystic. Mary San Giovanni is the voice of Mary Larson. Tim Sample is the voice of Mr. Gussie. Jim Hadlow is the voice of Joseph Ricci. This episode features a theme from The Dark Tome, Febriar by Peter Van Riet, with additional music by Blue Dot Sessions. Point Mystic is distributed under a Shared Worlds Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Sharealike 4.0 International, which means you're welcome to share and redistribute the material as widely as you like, share with your friends, make community, and make art together. Undertow is a production of Realm, hosted by Fred Greenhalgh, produced by Mary Hazzadoli, associate produced by Nicole Kreuter, executive produced by Fred Greenhalgh, Molly Barton, and Marcy Wiseman, original theme by Hubert Campbell. Find more shows like Undertow by following Realm on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or at realm.fm. Realm is your portal to another world. Listen away.